Fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Great move to the right at the 50. Cuts back to the left at the 40. He's loose at the 30. He's at the 20, the 10. Touchdown, Cardinals!
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
What would you give up to trade up? That is just one question as we close in on the 2018 NFL draft. As I size up the players around this poker table, Darren Urban, Kyle Odegaard, Paulie Prospect over here, still waiting for the name to be called. Someday, one day, probably. Obviously never. But I am looking at you guys and what kind of poker face you might be able to sport through the entirety of this podcast. Cardinals Underground. What sort of poker player would you guys be if here we were on a Saturday night and maybe you had a hand and maybe you would shove all your chips in? Or would you be like Jay Feely recently at his charity thing where he shoved all his chips in and he was completely bluffing and I totally fell for it? What sort of poker player would Darren Urban be?
First of all, not at all, because I don't play poker. But besides that, look, I mean, to me, you can only play so much poker when it comes to what we're talking about.
Too much at stake.
There just is too much. I mean, what are we doing here? Are we trying to get the quarterback? Are we not trying to get the quarterback? And we're not going to know until that pick is on the clock, whatever pick it might be, that the Cardinals are going to want it. But I there's a part of me that feels like, what are you going to mess around with? I mean, to me, you go if you – let's say – the Broncos are on the clock at 5 and the quarterback you really want is there and you've made the decision you want to trade up. If that guy's really there, don't mess around. You make your best offer, the one you're most comfortable with making, and you make it. And if they take it, great. And if they don't, they don't. But I don't think you mess around on a 10-minute window when other teams might be willing to drop in front of you. If that's truly the guy you want, that's kind of how I feel about it.
I think you need to decide, do you really want to get into the top five? Because you know how prohibitive that cost is. Are you waiting to see if maybe somebody slides out of the top five, closer to the top 10, and then you make a move, sort of like Kansas City did a year ago, sort of like Houston did a year ago? Or are you content with going with one of these second-tier quarterbacks in the second round?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Darren where you're talking about this draft in particular. Seems like it's such a seller's market in that 5 to 9 range. You've got 4 quarterbacks that everybody is pretty excited about. It seems certain teams might like 2 of them and somebody else might like 2 or 3 of them. But overall, it certainly seems like the demand is going to be there. And when there's talk about the Dolphins and the Bills and even, you know, the Patriots and all these different teams that either have the resources or really want to move up. And who knows what's true at this time of year, but it certainly seems like there are going to be teams that are in the market. And when you're looking at 5 through 9, like Darren's saying, I think when you're talking about whether to throw in that 4th round pick or not to kind of put the icing on the cake, if you believe in the quarterback, especially with the way the Cardinals are right now in this transition mode, retooling, I think it makes a lot of sense to go for it if you really love this guy and think he's your franchise.
And I'll add this. I don't think it's not going to be all 4 guys. I mean, I don't know which of the 4 it might be, but I have a hard time believing that Steve Keim and company are willing to, let's say, go up to 5 to get any one of the 4 guys. There's probably 1 or 2. So if they're off the board by then, there still might be quote unquote big name top 4 quarterbacks still available. But if they don't like them, you do not move up to do that. If they fall, that's one thing. And what you brought up is a whole different thing, Paul. I mean, when you start saying, do you go to 5 or do you wait to see if somebody slides? I mean, these are all decisions you've already made. You've already made, okay, and now I'm just throwing names out there. If Sam Darnold is there at 5, you absolutely trade up to get him. If Baker Mayfield is there at 5 and you don't wholeheartedly believe in him, then you absolutely are waiting. And to me, if you don't believe in Baker Mayfield, and I'm just, again, throwing out names, if you don't believe in Baker Mayfield at 5, I don't know why you'd believe in him at 10. That makes no sense to me.
Well, there's no doubt they've discussed every scenario. They've discussed every quarterback. You know, we're all in on this guy. Maybe we're in on this guy if he falls to us. We're willing to pay this much for that guy. You know, they have to know. If you look at last year, for example, there were 3 quarterbacks taken in the first 12 picks. All were trade-ups, every single quarterback. So if you believe that this is a copycat league, and from 1 year to the next, there might be some of that, and they might emulate that, whether it's the Cardinals or it's Buffalo or another team trying to come up that board, and then you factor in that the Mel Kuypers of the world don't have a great forecast on next year's quarterback class. There's not a lot of – you wonder, does that amp up the urgency of this Arizona Cardinals team to make the move here in 2018?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so much unknown about next year, and maybe 2 or 3 quarterbacks emerge. So I don't think you're looking at next year's class quite yet. But I agree with you with the way teams are trading up. I think there's no better value in the NFL than a quarterback on his rookie deal when you can have a guy – for under, you know, a couple million dollars for 4 years, and even the 5th-year option is super affordable if he's a really good player. So there's really no cost that is too high if you know this guy is going to turn into a franchise guy. Like Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, they obviously paid a pretty penny for him. Jared Goff in L.A., they paid a lot to move up, but both of those teams are sitting pretty right now, and I'm sure they're happy with what they did. So it's just a matter of knowing that this is a guy that can step in either this year or next year and become that franchise quarterback.
It does make me smile a little bit, though, when you talk about what the draft might be next year, because all the talk last year was it's okay if you don't get a quarterback this year because next year's class, this current one, that's the class.
Stellar.
Okay, except... except now that we're looking at all these guys, do you think
there's no Andrew Luck is what you're saying?
Well, we're looking at all these guys, and I'm saying if you had a chance to have Pat Mahomes or one of these guys, who would you take? If you had a chance to have Deshaun Watson or one of these guys, who would you take? Trubisky might be a little bit different, but even Trubisky. I mean, it's easy to say that next year's class isn't going to make it or next year's class is better or whatever. Everybody's always saying that. Ultimately, I don't see this as a copycat league in terms of the draft. This isn't about being a copycat league. This is about understanding that quarterback is the most important thing. That increases both because of what Kyle said, which is if you get that quarterback in the first round, you control him for 5 years, and in a salary cap conscious league, you need that cheap quarterback because if you don't get them cheap, they're super expensive, even if they're not great. That's number one. And number two, you got to have the guy, and everybody knows you got to have the guy, and there's so few of them, just like Steve Keim is always talking about. Everybody's going to trade up. I mean, almost every list that I've seen of the available players in the draft does not have, if you just are you ranking, forgetting of the importance of the position, and they're just ranking how good the players are, nobody has these quarterbacks in like the top 5. They have all other positions, all top 5 players. But there's a good chance all 4 quarterbacks could go in the top 5 if the right things happen, because quarterback's so important. And that's why teams trade up, is because if you don't, you're not going to get them.
Well, and that's precisely my point, is the urgency of it all.
Yeah.
There's urgency out there, whether, and you can only deal with the known. You have no idea. Could a bunch of candidates emerge next year? Perhaps. You don't know that either way. You can only deal with what is in front of you. And I'm based on right now and based on recent history, what happened last year, I just wonder, think out loud, okay, does that amp up some of the urgency for the Arizona Cardinals, who have admittedly needed an answer to the quarterback question, the long-term future franchise quarterback question, for a good decade now.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair, and I don't mean to cut you off, Kyle, but I would also say that that puts urgency to make sure you get the guy, but that also can force teams into making bad decisions because they panic.
And there has been this talk the last couple of years about needing a quarterback of the future, which you obviously did, but it seemed like in the last couple of drafts, the Cardinals were still in win-now mode. They still had Carson Palmer playing at a high level, especially after 2015, going back to the Robert Kimdichie draft. And I don't think they felt as much of an urgency to move up and chase a guy and go overspend. They felt like, if it's a good deal, maybe we'll go try to get a quarterback, or if one falls to us. But I don't think there was quite as much urgency because of the roster at that point because they were so competitive. Now with Carson Palmer leaving, being in transition, now to me it feels like now is more of the time where you're definitely looking toward kind of rebuilding this thing and changing it with possibly a young quarterback.
I mean, sure, you could end up with E.J. Manuel or Christian Ponder, you know, Blaine Gabbert. You know, you could reach, and it could really set your franchise back. There's no doubt about that. There's no one who knows that better than Steve Keim, the Cardinals GM.
The biggest issue comes with the supply and demand at the position. Where is a franchise quarterback going to be available? What's the compensation for it? Are you willing to put the franchise in a position to be set back for years if you're not right? I mean, it can be crippling for us if we traded the next couple drafts to go get a player that has never taken a snap and doesn't have success.
And it's funny, he talks about crippling the franchise. Here's something else to throw out there. What if you trade up a lot and you get, okay, he's pretty good. He's not great. I mean, I think time will still tell, but what if you get Marcus Mariota, who he's been okay. They've been okay. No one's talking about the Titans going and winning the Super Bowl anytime soon.
At least against the Cardinals, he didn't look like the answer for the next decade.
And so it's not just if you trade away all these assets and get and have it totally wash out. It's also if you trade all these assets and he's not really really good. That's the problem. You can't just get somebody solid. I mean, you can, and you might be able to make it work because he's cheaper in the short term, but will he ever take you over that hump? And the other problem is it's great if you get a cheaper quarterback right now, but if you traded all these assets, all these draft picks to build the rest of your team, what good might it be?
Well, and if you talk about a copycat league, I mean, Nick Foles, obviously a backup, led the Eagles to the championship. You know, you had Case Keenum and Blake Bortles in the conference championship game, so you could build a case either way. Maybe the Cardinals are going to go round two. They're going to target a Kyle Lauletta, the Senior Bowl MVP, go after maybe a Mike White who has the big arm and all the measurables at Western Kentucky. You know, maybe, I don't know, a Kyle Faulk out of Washington State. You never know which way they're going to go. Could they go corner at number 15 overall and then come back to the quarterback in round two? That might be more likely just because the risk of forcing it in the first round.
And that's kind of the hard part in where they're at 15, because there is all this talk about these four quarterbacks going, some people think maybe all of them in the top five, and a lot of people think at least in the top 10. So if you don't trade up, you're kind of in that area, which is a little bit gray. I think the one guy that makes sense is Lamar Jackson, who's been projected to be mid-first round, late first round. If you love a guy like that, if you think his athleticism can make up for maybe his accuracy issues, then yeah, Lamar Jackson at 15 makes sense. But if you're not sold on him, what other options do you have? You're not going to force a quarterback pick at 15 if you don't believe in him. And like you said, Paul, then cornerback comes into play, maybe wide receiver, right tackle. Then you can start going different ways. Best player available, maybe a safety that you didn't think was going to be there drops, and you just say, hey, this is the best guy left, and that's who we're grabbing.
I mean, maybe you take the old piece of paper, right, like you do, and when you're trying to make a big decision, and you split it down the middle, and you have yes and you have no, and now you ping-pong back to the other side that says urgency, get it done now, and you say, guess what? We have Sam Bradford and a Mike Glennon in the fold, and, oh, I don't know, someone like Josh Allen, a big pocket quarterback, has some athleticism, but he has the big arm. Man, he would be well served to serve at least a year under a Sam Bradford, a Mike Glennon. You know, Josh Allen could learn a lot in that scenario behind those two guys in particular.
Well, I'm at this point, I don't see any of these quarterbacks displacing Sam Bradford for 2018.
No.
So it doesn't matter if it's Josh Allen or whomever, they're going to sit. So the question becomes, again, it goes back to what we were originally talking about, which is, I don't see a scenario where they love them all. So who do they love? Is it Josh Allen? Is it Josh Rosen? You know, I don't think Darnold is. I think Darnold's going to be off the board at one, but we'll see how that goes.
Let's hear from Josh Allen real quick. Cardinals flight plan every other Wednesday. You can catch it, right? And including the day before the draft. And the Cardinals obviously have been visiting with the top prospects of the quarterback position, including Josh Allen, who was talking about football IQ.
I want them to know that I can understand football terminology. Obviously, coming from Wyoming and not playing against, you know, the greatest competition week in and week out, I don't think that has anything to do with, you know, football IQ. And I want them to understand that I have a high football IQ and I love this game. This is the only thing I've ever wanted, just to be an NFL quarterback.
I mean, you talk about a projection. He could be the number one pick overall, and 2 years ago he was playing in the JC ranks.
Yeah.
And he really wasn't recruited out of the JC. He was the one who was actually the catalyst to get a scholarship at Wyoming, his only D1 scholarship offer.
It's very interesting to me to see the dichotomy between Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen, where you look at the college production. Baker Mayfield was unbelievable at Oklahoma. His statistics were fantastic, but he's a shorter guy, doesn't have the arm strength that a Josh Allen does. And on the flip side, Josh Allen did not have success at Wyoming. And was that other factors? Was he raw and is going to eventually hit that potential? So I think the careers of those two guys in particular are going to be really fun to watch to see if one of them succeeds and one of them doesn't, which one works out. Is it the guy that you projected to do so well, or the guy that may have had, you know, some limiting factors but showed he could do it in college, and then he just comes to the NFL and keeps on doing it?
We may not agree on anything during this edition of Cardinals Underground.
I don't know why you say that.
Can we agree on one thing, as Darren even disagrees with my premise, that an NFL quarterback, to be effective, has to be able to beat you from the pocket? Do we all agree? Show of hands. Do we all agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Okay, so now you got to
Wait. Does Kyle agree with that?
I mean,
no, he's hesitant.
Oh, he's pondering. Come on, Kyle.
This is going to be his Lamar Jackson argument.
Oh, boy, the contrarian. Here he is.
Would you consider Michael Vick a successful quarterback?
I think Michael Vick played in a different league.
You know,
I really did.
See, I think they run more now.
I would say on third down, could Michael Vick beat you from the pocket? Sometimes. Not consistently, though, and that's what prevented him from being a championship
I'll give
quarterback.
You this. I think you're right when you make that comparison. I do think Michael Vick was a good quarterback. I also wonder if he's an outlier.
I think if you're athletic, like if we're talking about Lamar Jackson, I think he can be a successful NFL quarterback. I don't think he's going to sit in the pocket and dice you up like some of these other guys can, but the ability to run with design runs or scrambling, I think, makes up for a lot of some of the flaws he has in the pocket.
What's the shelf life on that, though?
I mean, I don't think they get injured at a higher rate than
Kyle did research on this. You're going to
lose regular quarterbacks.
He's talked to me about this before.
Well, if not injury, what's the effectiveness? Because, I mean, come on, we can all agree that NFL defenses are going to chase down Lamar Jackson at a much greater rate than D1 college.
Yeah, he's not going to have the same yards per carry, but the threat of it making you spy on him. And, I mean, I think a lot of these quarterbacks that are a little bit mobile helps them so much. Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck, all of them have some mobility to them. And obviously you can win in the pocket. Tom Brady does it. Peyton Manning did it. So there's different ways to do it. But I don't want to say that you have to be good in the pocket to have success, because I think enough guys have shown the ability to kind of break down and have a nice run in order to have success.
And I will say this, if there's one quarterback who's going to slide, it'll be Josh Rosen for a couple of factors, and that's one of them. That's a big one. He really is a pocket quarterback without that mobility and escapability the other guys have.
Let me ask you this question. Why, other than supposedly people saying this, which we don't know why they're saying it, why would Josh Rosen be more likely than Josh Allen to drop, in your opinion?
Injuries. He had the two concussions last year. He had the shoulder injury that cut short one of personality, perhaps. I think some teams are scared of him being a free thinker, a highly intelligent guy.
So that trumps somebody who can't hit the broadside of a barn half the time.
Oh, no. I'm not saying that. I honestly, if you said, Paul, you have the first pick in the draft, I would probably go Josh Rosen. I just don't think that NFL teams...
Well, but see, that's what I'm asking you.
Because I'm very much in favor of the guy who can go through all his reads and beat you with his mind and his accuracy,
No.
And that guy is Rosen.
And again, I guess where I'm coming from, and I'm curious from Kyle's perspective, but from both you guys, it's funny that you sit there and say, I would take Rosen over Allen, but you think all the rest of these teams would rather have Allen than Rosen? Because the original premise was Rosen is going to drop, is the most likely to drop. And my point is I don't think that's true.
Well,
I will not be surprised if Rosen goes ahead of Allen.
I didn't just create that out of thin air.
No, I know you did.
I read a recent synopsis of all the mock drafts, like all 800 of them, and they said based on those mock drafts, now how many of these are just guys in their basement? How many of these are actually people who have talked to real NFL scouts and or GMs? I don't know.
But even if they've talked to them,
right?
What are they?
Are we believing them?
Right. Okay. All I'm going on is what's out there.
Yeah. I get that.
Otherwise,
I guess that's kind of my point.
Otherwise, we just have pure chaos. I'm just going on what's out there in the mock drafts.
Pure chaos.
Based on, and you're right. I mean, somebody put out, I think it was Mark Dalton, right? The Cardinals VP put out that the hit rate was just over 4 picks correct out of 32 based on all. And the highest number of hits was the NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah and ESPN NFL Nation with 8 correct players to correct teams last year in round one.
And especially this year where every one of these quarterbacks does have a flaw or two that you can dissect. And that's why I think, you know, that all these teams, a lot of them will order them differently, 1 through 4, depending on what you like. I agree with Darren where I think Sam Darnold is going to be the number one pick, but I don't think that's a sure thing. I mean, if Baker Mayfield or Josh Allen or Josh Rosen went number one, it wouldn't shock me.
Nope.
So I agree where I think Rosen will go higher than Allen. I agree with you, but I mean, you could say the Giants like a certain guy because you love Allen's arm strength and he is more athletic. So he's got more tools than Rosen, but Rosen is way more polished. Mentally, he's a lot further along. I think you can make a case for any 4 of these guys.
And I will say, you know, as we go back and forth to what we saw last year, and we're picking at some of the scabs at some of these guys. But again, where were we at this time last year? Mitchell Trubisky's only played basically 1 year of college. We don't know what he can do. Deshaun Watson, he's not a pocket quarterback. He gets out of the pocket too much. We don't know if he can win in the pocket. Pat Mahomes, he's not accurate at all. Watch him. He's got a great arm, but he can't hit the broadside of a barn. I mean, again, we go through this every year with every single top quarterback prospect. We hear about what they can't do instead of what they can. And the reality is nobody knows, including every single one of the 32 NFL teams, which of these guys is going to be successful on this level. So we can sit here and talk about it just like we can sit and look at all the narratives. But ultimately, nobody freaking knows, and you're going to be lucky if you end up with the right one.
Two of them are probably going to bust, and 2 of them are going to be good, but we don't know which 2.
Once again, I'm going to come back to the copycat league thing, and the best thing to happen to Josh Allen is Carson Wentz. That is a real asset.
See,
if you're Josh Allen right now, because you can't tell me teams aren't looking at Carson Wentz, same measurables, same type of quarterback,
but
same
not
coach,
the same type of quarterback,
same inferior competition level. I mean, there would be a lot greater trepidation about Josh Allen if it wasn't for Carson Wentz last year and the way he's blossomed through 2 years.
Other than the fact that they played at a smaller school, first of all, Wentz was like isn't he 1AA or D2 or whatever?
1AA. The FCS, yes.
And Wyoming isn't. And Carson Wentz is way more mobile than Josh Allen. Josh Allen can move around, but Carson Wentz is not. I mean, I compared Carson Wentz to, in some ways, to me.
Yeah, but let's not make Carson Wentz out to be Michael Vick either. I mean, you know, he might be slightly more athletic, but you're not seeing a parallel between Carson Wentz and Josh Allen in terms of the measurables
big
and the scouting report?
I mean, I don't.
With a huge arm and the same size.
But if there's parallels there, why doesn't Lamar Jackson get a boost with what Deshaun Watson just did if they're similar quarterbacks?
You don't think he does?
I don't think so.
No. Oh, absolutely he does.
Oh, Deshaun Watson went.
Lamar Jackson gets a boost because of what Deshaun Watson did last year.
I mean, Deshaun Watson would probably be the number one overall pick in a redraft, right? If you had to do it again last year?
Without it in front of me, I don't know. But he would definitely go higher than 12.
He would go higher
12.
Than 10 or
and,
12. Or
and Lamar Jackson is the 5th-ranked quarterback in this class. Yeah.
And
so
people are saying he might be a second round. I agree with Kyle. I don't think
Lamar Jackson is the biggest wild card in the draft.
Yeah. Right.
He could go on the top 15 or he could go round 2. There's no question about that.
Yeah. I guess I just don't – I don't think the last year – I think the comparisons – maybe you're nice to look at if you want to look at Wentz compared to Josh Allen or Watson and Jackson. But I think in the end, these scouts have seen a ton of quarterbacks. They see some comparisons that work and some that don't. But in the end, I think it goes back to kind of what they've known as scouts for a long time. And that might be a small piece of the puzzle, but I don't think it'll move Josh Allen way up the board because he's like Wentz.
Well, speaking of Lamar Jackson, that's what Mike Mayock was speaking about on the Doug and Wolf Show on Arizona Sports 98.7 FM.
I'm the most intrigued by Lamar Jackson. Somebody's going to commit to this kid both philosophically and schematically, because if you draft him, you have to have a plan. I use Bill O'Brien as the example with Deshaun Watson last year in Houston. Although he's behind Deshaun Watson as a thrower, he's ahead of him as a runner. I mean, the quarterback thing is just intriguing.
It is intriguing, and it's going to take a lot of guts. Or you're going to use a second-round pick and have the ability to sit him for a long time. I mean, I'd love for him to succeed, but based on the little bit, and you know, this is you guys are going to rip me for this, but the little bit that I saw when we are on the road and you're watching Louisville football in your hotel room on a Saturday, the inaccuracy is rampant. I mean, he's inaccurate and he's inconsistent, and some of the easiest throws in the world, he's airmailing. That he just would not be my quarterback in the NFL.
I've said this a lot of times on these on this podcast, and I've written it, and you guys have heard me say it off the air. I am not a huge fan of inaccurate guys. That's why, to me, both Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, to me, have big red flags, because I've seen up close and personal too many quarterbacks come through this franchise in particular that had some accuracy issues in college, and I kept hearing about how they can be fixed, and they don't get fixed. They don't get fixed on this level.
Even Josh Allen was talking about it the other day, that Jordan Palmer, Carson's younger brother, he's been working with him for 2 months in Southern California, said that he was overstriding, and then his elbow was dropping, and so he's changed his footwork, and he feels like he's a different quarterback. And how can you not think of Tim Tebow trying to redo his throwing motion, and then when they are actually playing football, he reverted to his old form?
Yeah, there have been a few guys that have steadily increased their completion percentage and worked out those accuracy issues, but you're right, where a lot of them came into the NFL without a question mark, and it never turned around. And you can have all the arm strength in the world, but if you can't make that simple pass on 3rd and 6 to get the first down, it's really going to stop you from being a super efficient offense.
Right, and then you can have all the confidence in the world, and that would bring us to Baker Mayfield and what separates him from other quarterbacks.
The reason I got here is because I know how to work. And so for me, nothing's been given. Everything's been earned. I had a lot of help on the way. There's no doubt about that. But mental toughness for me, I think, is something I have over those guys, and that can take you a long way.
I mean, just as intriguing to me as Lamar Jackson. Can Baker Mayfield make it in the NFL?
I think it's a fair question. I mean, again, you look at the size, and we obviously have proof of guys like Drew Brees and Russell Wilson in particular that are a little bit shorter that can make it work. But again, it's making that leap and projecting from that level to the NFL. And with all due respect to Oklahoma, which is a fantastic college program, they run an offense that doesn't look really anything like in the NFL. And more importantly, it never sees defenses like you're going to see in the NFL. I mean,
and guess what? In his two playoff games, he didn't look that good. And he was not that effective.
And I'm not saying he can't be successful. I mean, the quarterbacks are going to have to come from somewhere. And at some point, somebody makes the leap. But for me, it gets to the point where it's like, God bless all these scouts and GMs that are trying to make these projections, because I just don't know how you do it. I mean, ultimately, it to me, with almost all of these guys, we can sit here and say whatever for the longest time, but until they actually get on the NFL field, you can't see it. And okay, some guys you might be able to see it a little bit more. Like, if you're talking about a Bradley Chubb and you're just talking about a guy who has to go get the quarterback, I think that projects, that's a much easier of a projection. But some of these skill guys, especially quarterback and different positions, I don't know how you do it realistically. And you know what? Realistically, you don't. You hope you make the right call, and then we're all going to see these guys get drafted high and a number of them fail, and we're going to ream our team's GMs, or we're going to say it was a bust, or talk about this. And the reality is nobody knew. Nobody knew.
All right, let's talk about a receiver for the Cardinals real quick, because if they don't get that quarterback, where do they go? They could easily go cornerback, but we'll talk about that in a moment. Obviously, there appears to be a need at receiver. What if it was Calvin Ridley, the Alabama receiver who most project as the top guy off the board at that position, and here he is on what he wanted to prove in workouts?
I got quickness. You know, I know I got the quickness in the routes and the get out of my breaks, but I just really want to show everybody I am strong and I can gain weight. And, you know, I am a good player, so I do feel like I'm the best receiver in the draft. You're getting a playmaker. You're going to get somebody who's going to come in right away day one and make plays and play right away.
All right, there you go. Calvin Ridley, Alabama on the NFL Network, 6'1 or so, about 190, 40-yard dash, 4.43. Very talented, no doubt about it, but it's not like he's Julio Jones or A.J. Green. He's not in that classification,
yeah.
Is he, Kyle?
Yeah, no, he's, I think, a super polished guy who came into Alabama and made a difference right away. And when you're talking about an Alabama depth chart, to get on the field immediately and start producing is very impressive. And I think when he whatever team he goes to, when he comes in, I think he's going to be pretty effective pretty soon because he knows the route tree. He can run a lot of different routes. The question is with him, where is that high-end potential? He's certainly a polished guy, but there's questions about a little bit of athleticism with him, where when you're picking at 15, you want a guy that can clearly be your number one for a long time. Does he have that gear of, like you said, maybe not even a Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, that range, but that second tier of elite wideouts, can he get to that point?
You know, and I look at the guys that are considered the top-end receivers, whether it's a DJ Moore or a Christian Kirk or Ridley, and I don't – they all are talented – but I don't see any of these, like you said, a Julio Jones, somebody with the size speed combination that can be your number one, even Larry back in the day. I mean, would he be awesome to pair with Larry Fitzgerald?
Sure.
I think so. It gives you some speed and it would be a very nice 1A kind of thing. But when Larry Fitzgerald left and all of a sudden you don't have a big body receiver and you're talking about a guy who might be like a Christian Kirk or Ridley, on this level, who knows, might be better served as one of these guys that's doing crossing routes, using their speed to get open. And I'm like, okay, so can you win one-on-one down the field? I mean,
and the thing is, for 2 months, I would say the greatest percentage of mock drafts have the Arizona Cardinals taking Calvin Ridley,
yeah,
based on need and where he is and where the Cardinals are in that first round. But here's the thing. Steve Keim has said how many times if he's in the first round and he's somewhere in the middle to the upper end of the first round, he's going left tackle, quarterback, pass rusher, or cornerback. Usually receiver is not somewhere he's going at this point in the draft.
Yeah, I think it would have to depend on how you have him ranked. If he's clearly your number one receiver and one of your top players and two or three cornerbacks have already gone, I agree with you where, you know, positional value – a shutdown cornerback is more valuable than a good receiver. But if the receiver is ranked so much higher, and knowing the 2018 depth chart where you can plug this guy in and he's a pretty big weapon for Sam Bradford immediately, that's got to be in your mind a little bit. But Steve Keim does think in 3 or 4 year vision. So I agree with you where if all things being equal, taking that cornerback to pair with Patrick Peterson makes a lot of sense.
And you can't tell me that three receivers going in the top 10 a year ago and doing collectively a lot of nothing, that's got to leave a bad taste in every GM's mouth and make them a little more apprehensive than maybe they were before
and
this
season.
Even
the last couple of years, it's been – I mean, that was it 2014 where the class was unbelievable, the wide receivers. In the last few years, they haven't lived up to it. Again, I don't know if that plays a huge role, much like comparing the quarterbacks, because, you know, if those wide receivers don't get hurt or don't deal with stuff, does that change the narrative? I think they're more looking at the traits of these guys, and I just don't feel like they have everything you need to have, like, an elite wide receiver, all those tools.
All right, so maybe round two, you go receiver. Maybe it would be, oh, I don't know, a Scottsdale guy by the name of Christian Kirk, and he was starring at Texas A&M the last few years after he left town, and here's what he had to say about visiting with the Cardinals.
You know, I love the state of Arizona, born and raised, you know, Valley kid, and I actually had a private visit with them already. Got to sit down with the GM, wide receiver coach, the offensive coordinator, have dinner and whatnot, and, you know, definitely really like their staff and, you know, what they have going on over there. So it would definitely be, you know, surreal if I could go and play there.
That is Christian Kirk, and we're talking 5'10", 40-yard dash, 4.47. Very athletic, also a return man.
I think he'd fit awesome, especially as a second-round pick. He'd fit awesome here, I think. But, I mean, but again, you start doing the juggling of what we're talking about. Okay, and again, we'll see kind of how it plays out. If some of the things we've talked about – let's say they don't go quarterback in the first round. Let's say they go cornerback. And you're sitting with their second round pick and you haven't taken a quarterback yet and Christian Kirk's there but there's another quarterback that you're like, okay. I mean, then you start thinking, okay, we really could use this wide receiver, but are we again going to pass on a quarterback in the first two rounds? If you go quarterback in that first round and Kirk's there, but there's also a cornerback and you know you're at this point pretty short in the cornerback room even more than you were last year at this time? I mean, these are the decisions that they're going to have to make. You've got so many places that would be really nice to bolster, and you're only going to have so many picks. And that's if you don't make a trade and give up some of those picks. Yeah.
So the quarterback question has been out there for many years. Same with the cornerback question. You've been searching, and Patrick Peterson knows that better than anyone.
I feel if I'm able to be moved around a little bit more, obviously quarterbacks give me a couple more opportunities. And if we can find a solid number two corner to make it kind of difficult for the quarterback to pick and choose which side he want to go on, I think that'll make not only me but the defense a lot better.
And let's not forget, you've got a brand new head coach. If memory serves, Kyle blitzed more than any other defensive coordinator in the league a year ago. That would seem to put an emphasis on having two solid corners who can play on an island.
And a guy who comes from a defensive backs coaching background who obviously is going to pay a lot of attention to the cornerbacks. And the first round does kind of line up where, depending on who's available, the Jaire Alexander from Louisville, Josh Jackson from Iowa, Mike Hughes from Central Florida, all those guys have been floated as possible links to the Cardinals at 15, and it's hard to know which ones Steve Keim and the scouting staff prefer, because all of them are a little bit different and they have their strengths and weaknesses. But like you said, at 15, knowing you have Patrick Peterson, if you love a guy that plays corner and quarterback isn't a feasible scenario, that does seem like one of the other top options because of who's available at that point and the need.
All right, how about Steve Keim, his thoughts on the cornerback group overall in this draft?
I think there's quality at the top, the middle, and the back end of guys who can not only contribute, but contribute early. I mean, there's some polished players in the top part of the draft, in my opinion, and there's some guys that I think have the right traits that you can find in the middle rounds as well.
What about a safety? What about after the loss of Tyrann Mathieu and Tyvon Branch, the uncertainty there? What about, a Derwin James out of Florida State, a guy who's likened to Cam Chancellor? Darren Urban, how'd you like to have Cam Chancellor roaming the secondary for the Cardinals?
I'm curious. The only thing that makes me hesitate a little bit on Derwin James is because when I read about him, I in my mind's eye, I see Dalen Buchanan. I mean, I don't know if you need another guy like that when you've got Dalen Buchanan and you're having to put him up front. I mean, the one thing in the recent history of Steve Wilks as defensive coordinator and the secondary that he led before he was defensive coordinator in Carolina is they didn't put a whole lot into the secondary.
It's true. It's a good point.
They're big on up front, the front seven on defense, and he's talked a million times about being up front on both the offensive and defensive line. So to me, unless Derwin James just jumps off your draft board at that point in terms of a grade and maybe you don't have a choice, that seems like a long shot to me at safety, but, you know, who knows how it'll play out.
Is that the sleeper position group, D-line? Is that, I mean, are we going to be sitting here on draft night and go, you know, for all the talk about quarterback and cornerback and receiver, we should have known all along that you got to protect the quarterback, you got to stop the run. How many times has Steve Wilks mentioned that? It all starts up front in the trenches. Dang, I knew they were going to go Vita Vea.
Right. I mean, I think if Vita Vea is there, it's intriguing because of his tools. But I also look at it like you've got Corey Peters, you've got Olsen Pierre, who had a really nice season, who should continue to improve. Depending on what you think of Robert Kimdichie, if you feel like you can unlock him a little bit and make him a productive member of that line, that gives you three pretty decent offensive or defensive linemen, and you won't necessarily need one. So I think if somebody jumps off the page, it makes sense. But I also think it's a position where if you do believe in Kimdichie and you don't love the guys that are there when you're on the clock, I could easily see them passing on him early on. Or even if you go through the whole draft and don't grab a defensive lineman, that wouldn't shock me.
And I will say that I think if you, again, you look at last year, what the Cardinals did, you know, they had Tyrann Mathieu, they had Tyvon Branch, they had already signed Antoine Bethea. I don't think they were looking to get somebody like Buda Baker in the second round. But again, they got to that point, and all of a sudden he's, again, sticking out like a sore thumb, like Steve Keim likes to say, on the top 120 board.
But don't you think they saw Tyrann Mathieu's contract sort of calling their name in the distance, right?
I don't think.
That was front burner.
Yeah, I agree. But I mean, if Buda Baker's not there in the second round, do I think they draft the safety in the second round? Probably not.
I mean, I'm not saying they're going to force a pick, but when they saw him there and knowing Tyrann Mathieu's contract situation and maybe his status with the injury.
Again, I don't disagree.
That accelerated the urgency.
I guess,
not unlike what I'm trying to say might happen with quarterback this year. If you're sitting there and you're in the middle of the first round, and maybe you trade up a little bit, not to the top, but trade up a little bit in that round to go after the guy you know checks a big box on your sheet.
Well, no, no, I'm not saying you wouldn't, but again, if you're not, you got to have the right guy to trade up for. Okay. You're not trading assets. You're not chasing a guy. You know, again, where the original point of this is, you know, do you go after a defensive lineman, let's say, with that first pick? I mean, I think you do if the right grade's on him. I don't think you do because you think that Robert Condici's not going to come through for you at this point. I just don't believe that. And, you know, I go back to the Buddha thing, and it's like, yeah, do I think the Matthew thing factored into it? I absolutely think it factored into it. Do I think that they went into the draft saying, okay, these first couple rounds, we got to find Tyrann Mathieu's replacement? I do not think that, no.
Maybe the Robert Kimdichie, if it proves to be a failed pick, maybe that was motivated in large part because they knew Calais Campbell. The clock was ticking on that contract.
I agree with that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is Steve Keim has a tendency to always look 2 years. He'd done it with Kimdichie. He did it with DJ Humphries. Talk about Buddha. I mean, Hassan Reddick to an extent, where he didn't necessarily be needed as a starter, as a rookie, until Deon Buchanan got hurt and you needed, and then Marcus Golden got hurt, so he went in there. But if you look at the 2018 roster, there's a distinct set of needs. But if you look at 2019, there's all sorts of holes because there's a bunch of guys on expiring contracts, and you can go a number of ways. So what they decide to do, I think right tackle is one where you're fine this year because you have Andre Smith, who's a veteran who you just signed, and you feel like you can get through the year with him. But if you're looking 2 years down the road, then right tackle comes into play, or any number of positions on both sides of the ball, I think, can open up. And that's why you look at the grades. And once they find a really highly rated player like Buda Baker or different guys, I think that's why Steve Keim pounces.
And I will say that, do I think they were going to draft a defensive lineman because Campbell was probably going to go into his last year that year? Yes. I think they took Robert Kimdichie in the first round because that, and oh, by the way, here's a guy that a lot of people thought was a top five or top 10 pick, and he slid all the way to 29.
Correct. Yeah.
Again, what happened? Stuck out like a sore thumb on the board, and it happened to match up with needing a defensive line. I think it's got those go together.
Yeah. My other sleeper position, as we wrap up this edition of Cardinals Underground, and I want this recorded right here, right now, Jim Omohundro, center. Billy Price, the guy who tore partial torn pec at the combine when he was doing the bench press. I mean,
I was there when that happened.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Where was he about on there? Was he screaming in pain? How bad was it?
No, it was weird because we were in the way it's set up at the combine. You have this giant room for interviews, and then there's like a giant curtain, and then the other side they have fans, and then the coaches, and they're doing the bench press for everybody, and it gets really loud in there. And I kind of peeked around the corner, and I'm watching this guy do it, and I didn't know it was him at the time. But he did whatever he did, 2 or 3 reps, and all of a sudden he stopped, and everybody gets real quiet, I knew somebody got hurt, and it turned out to be him.
Wow. I could just see that center position. There are some really good centers in this draft, especially if they dropped around 2 or round 3. Maybe you could nab one of those guys in round 3, like an injured Billy Price. I think you take that, you submit that card, and run.
Well, there's speculation that 3 are going to go in the first round now, so I think if you want any of those big names, you're looking at probably the second round if you're lucky. If you're talking about 15, nobody's really connecting a center to the Cardinals at 15, so that'd be a surprise. But it's another position where you've got A.Q. Shipley and you've got Evan Bame. But like you said, looking toward the future, if you find a guy that can nail down that spot, you're in good shape.
If only every single draft pick in Cardinals history was a third-round Hall of Famer, like Aeneas Williams, who's going to announce the Cardinals' second-round selection. How about that? I mean, Aeneas, he'll hit that out of the park. And then I haven't heard this name in a while, and it automatically brought a smile to my face when it says here that Deuce Latui is going to handle the third round pick from Dallas. I mean, big Deuce. I mean, there's no better personality than Deuce, and he's also a former Walter Payton Man of the Year award nominee. And then on Saturday, you're going to have Frank Sanders and Neil Rackers going to be standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona, to announce the fourth round selection. Who's responsible for that marketing? Darren, are you behind that? Because Tal's too young to remember the Eagles song. What about you?
Actually, my first,
it's a classic.
My first thought is while I think it's awesome that all these teams have all these people announcing, what happens if the pick gets traded? What do they do?
And you go all the way to Winslow, and then
you're just standing on a corner.
I mean, as it stands right now,
that'd be good TV, by the way.
If I looked correctly, every single pick for the Cardinals, other than their first round pick, has somebody scheduled to announce it. Every single one has a different person.
It's a TV event. The NFL draft isn't a draft. It's made for TV, right?
So you I'm saying, if it gets the Pickett's trade,
you stand there for a year and then do it next year.
That'd be solid TV, though. They keep going back to Winslow, Arizona, and they're still standing on the corner. You know, and that would be money. There's no doubt about that.
You definitely got to take it easy then.
All right, you got to show up for the Cardinals draft party at University of Phoenix Stadium, by the way, because I'll be out there, Paulie, PA Mike, and I need all the support we can get out there. Okay, we got to make this an interactive event. It's brought to you by Arizona Ford Dealers. It'll be open at 4:30. The draft starts at 5. They do a great job of making it entertaining. It moves. The NFL Network broadcast is there. A bunch of Cardinals videos are there. I mean, a lot of different stuff for fans. The interactive zone for kids. You got autographs. You got entertainment. They got like a 200-foot zip line. Show of hands. Who would do the zip line? Darren?
Oh, yeah. I would do the zip line.
Still got the zip line in you?
I'm not going to be there, but I would do the zip line.
All right. You and your laptop, you'd be on the zip line. That'd be good. Sure. And so anyway, go to azcardinals.com. You can check out all the information and maybe the two best words in the English language, free parking. So that's always solid. And Kyle, wait a minute. That's right. I buried the lead on this whole thing. You're going to Dallas.
Kyle should have brought it up himself.
Wow. You're not going to be standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona. You'll be in Big D.
I'll try to find a zip line in Dallas and have a good time.
Well, he could still stand on the corner. That Winslow thing's Saturday, and he's in Dallas Thursday.
If everything works out, we'll have Kyle live with a first-round pick via satellite uplink right there at the Cardinals draft party on the Jumbotron.
I'm hoping the first-round pick will be there because then it'll feel like a worthwhile trip. I'm hoping I don't go and they draft somebody that's not there and just kind of look around and try to figure out a story.
They trade down and that's gonna all right. Well, I had a fortune cookie earlier today at lunch and it said something about making a big, bold, aggressive decision, and I took that as foreshadowing looking into the crystal football for the Cardinals on draft night.
Fortune cookies are never wrong.
At least Kyle's working with me. Darren's very skeptical over there. Too many years in a newsroom. Darren just isn't buying. That'll do it for this edition of Cardinals on the Ground.